Okay. Good morning, everybody. My name is Aaron Schakowsky. I'm a senior program manager with the Enterprise Client Management team, and I'm the PM owner for both the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit as well as Configuration Manager OSD. There was a little mix-up with the title name and the abstract and all that, so I want to just be blatantly clear here and obvious that this session is talking about OSD and Config Manager. Hopefully the abstract actually got updated and you saw that. If that was not what you were expecting, feel free to stay. It's going to be a wonderful presentation, I promise you. I'm first going to talk about the new OSD features of Config Manager SP1, and then I'll take a look at what's coming with OS deployment in the new release. So just a quick rundown of what I'm going to talk about regarding SP1. Some of the new functionality that's related to the release of Windows 8 and some other work that we've done specifically with OSD in SP1. So first, regarding setup, as a lot of you may know, we changed from the Windows 7 AIK to the Windows 8 ADK, the Assessment and Deployment Kit. With that, new version of Windows PE, new version of USMT, and all that good stuff. When you run setup, the default boot images will be updated to the new version of Windows PE. I'll talk a little bit about more of this later, but as some of you also may know, that there were some issues with that. Some customers encountered issues around being able to deploy to older hardware, older BIOSes, some older virtualization platforms. I'll talk a little bit about that later and what we're doing about that. If you have any custom boot images, you will need to update those manually. Those don't get touched by setup, so you'll need to make sure that Windows PE is revised there up to the new version. And then during setup as well, we're going to automatically create the USMT package for you. So that's something, if you're using the new version of USMT, it'll already be there and you can associate with that. A quick note, is my tech there? Because the timer's not running. So hopefully I don't get... can we start the timer running? Cool. Thanks. Try and keep things on schedule today. Okay, so with the ADK, there are three components that we require. The deployment tools, which is all the good fun stuff like DISM and ImageX and all of that. Windows PE, of course, we need for our boot images, as well as USMT. I'm not going to go through each one of these little bullets here, but this gives you an idea of where we need those components, which roles require those to be installed. And the ADK, setup with the prereq check will check this. So depending upon your configuration and how you're doing your install, we'll check to make sure that these components are there. And one note is you can't have both the AIK and the ADK installed simultaneously on the same system. I personally haven't tried this, but one of my colleagues told me that you actually, the Windows 8 ADK actually doesn't enforce the removal of the 7 AIK. I think some components, I would hope that some components are updated there, but make sure that you uninstall that, the Windows 7 AIK before installing the Windows 8 ADK. With USMT, it's a new version for Windows 8. This also is a bit of a reference slide here. The version of USMT maps to the version of the OS, so you need to make sure that you're using the compatible version. And it's the version that you are, the destination OS is the key one. So if you are still deploying Windows XP and still need to be doing migrations of data into a XP environment, then you're going to need to go out to the download center and get USMT 3 and then manually create a package inside of Config Manager. Definitely works, fully supported. It's just we're not going to do that automatically for you. We're only using, by default, the version of USMT that comes in the Windows 8 ADK. If you're deploying Windows 7 today or Server 2008 R2, the deployment of Windows 8 and the deployment of Windows Server 2012 is very much the same. There's not a lot of fundamental changes in terms of how those are being deployed. Specifically for our site system roles in Config Manager, The supported configuration document on TechNet will tell you exactly which roles are supported on which platforms. But I just wanted to note that specifically for OSD, our primary roles of the state migration point and the distribution point with Pixie are supported on Server 2012, as well as the DP without Pixie on Windows 8. And that's just because you can't install WDS on Windows 8. But you can at least have it as a distribution point. So briefly on UEFI, there's a bunch of other sessions going on this week that will talk about UEFI in more detail. I think there was actually one yesterday. I was walking through the halls and I saw it up on the boards. So I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on what UEFI is and, you know, specifically how to use it, but I just wanted to note that in the context of OSD, this is, you know, it's important to know about this topic and when it's going to apply, what hardware you have that's using UEFI. Some of the systems will have the CSMs, the compatibility support module, where they'll support both UEFI as well as legacy BIOS, and you can switch that. I've also heard that there are some vendors that, while they may support legacy BIOS mode, they may not support Pixie with UEFI. So some of the vendors, it's kind of a mix in terms of exactly what they support there. So definitely check with your hardware vendors to determine how they're supporting UEFI standard as well as legacy BIOS if you still need to use that. There is a different disk configuration that's required for UEFI, and we are now handling that with SP1 for you. So out of the box, we've added some steps to be able to address that in the task sequence, and I'll show you that in a little bit. And another key point here is that if you are deploying both x86 and x64 operating systems, a lot of people would then use just a single x86 boot image to deploy both operating systems. In a UEFI environment, the architecture has to match all the way through. So if you're deploying an x64 operating system on UEFI, you have to be using an x64 boot image. So that's a key point to make sure that you're using. I'm not going to talk a lot about this slide. it's a bit of an eye chart. There's a lot of detail here. If you want to take a photo real quick, great. If not, you know, the slides are up on Channel 9, so you can go back and you can review this later. But it just gives you a breakdown of, for all the architectures, you know, what's supported and what's not. So when the task sequence kicks off, we now set a read-only variable to determine whether or not the system is a UEFI system. That variable can then be used underneath the hood for conditions on steps, and we use this particularly for determining whether or not we're going to do the UEFI-specific disk configuration, and I'll show you that in the demo. One note is that in the context of the task sequence, you can't convert from a legacy BIOS to UEFI. So there's no process by which you can start a deployment on a legacy BIOS system and by the end of it have it on a UEFI system. You have to make that decision up front and configure the hardware for that and go from there. And I think the note here about Pixie boot is what I already mentioned in terms of the UEFI systems that have the CSM. In some instances, some vendors don't have Pixie support in UEFI. So you have, if you need to do Pixie, you have to use the legacy BIOS. So again, your mileage may vary depending upon your hardware vendor. So with pre-stage media, we made some improvements here. Previously, not all the content would be pre-staged. It was really just the WIM file. And then as the task sequence would run, it would reach out to the distribution point to get the rest of the content. So we've made some improvements there whereby you can now pre-stage all of the content, applications, drivers, and all that. It'll check locally first. If it's got everything that it needs, great, it rolls. Otherwise, if there's been any changes, if there's some corruption perhaps, and you know, perhaps the hash is off, then it will go out to the distribution point to download that content. So you can create the task sequence media right from the console, specifically for the task sequence that you're using. It's a type of media selection, and I'll show you that in the demo. And again, as I mentioned, you can add the applications or packages, as well as driver packages, right to that pre-stage media file. So in a similar vein, we're using the pre-stage media functionality to support Windows To Go. For those of you that don't know, Windows To Go is a technology where you can run a fully functional version of Windows off of a USB stick. So this is a Windows To Go drive. It's only 32 gigs, but it's loaded with Windows To Go. So I could boot any of your laptops. I could take your laptop and I could boot off this drive and have my own fully functional version of Windows. So this is great in a number of scenarios. I think the Windows To Go team actually has a session this week. I had heard originally they didn't, but I think I heard yesterday that there actually is a session devoted to Windows To Go. So check the schedule for that. We did a lot of work with the Windows To Go team during SP1 on creating an integrated experience between Windows To Go and Config Manager. And what we're doing in SP1 is giving IT pros the ability to create all of the content that's needed to provision a Windows To Go drive, and I'll walk you through this demo here in just a second. And then what the end user can do is go out to the self-service portal, whether the software center on their device, or if you're using the app catalog, they can go there. And just by installing the Windows To Go creator off of the portal, they can provision their own disk. So as the IT pro, you can set everything up and get everything ready, and then if you distribute the drives out to users, then they can go and they can deploy their own drive and set their own drive up. So you don't have to go through the process of figuring out some depot to set up a whole bunch of disks and flip through them real quick to try and set up the Windows To Go disks. You can offload that work onto your users. We also have an attribute on the properties of the objects. So Windows To Go, it's full Windows. It's just Windows. There's no smoke and mirrors. Well, there's some smoke and mirrors, I guess, but from the context of how it operates, it's just Windows. So you can still manage it as a Config Manager client. And we have a new attribute on the properties of the object that I'll show you. So you can use that to determine which systems are Windows To Go systems. And with that, let's see if the demos will work. Wiki. Oh. Okay. So I've opened up the properties of an object. I don't have a lot of systems in this environment, so this is actually my demo server itself. So it's not Windows To Go, unfortunately, but you can see here the new attribute, portable operating system, which determines whether or not it's a Windows To Go. So if this was set to true, then you would see, hey, cool, he's running his demo off of Windows To Go. But I'm not that cool. I didn't get that set up, so... you get this as a false portable operating system. Okay, so to create, so as the IT pro, as the admin, to set up your system to be able to give your users the ability to provision their own Windows To Go drives, we're using our task sequence media creation. So the first thing is to run the create task sequence media, and we're going to do this as pre-stage media. And we'll say, yes, let's do this unattended. And just for the purposes of this, I'm going to do site-based, because there's a few less options to type in. Let's just call this Windows To Go.wim. I'm not really going to run it, because it takes a while. But just to show you the options. Again, I don't recommend this, but I'm doing it just to not have to type as much. And we'll allow UDA. So here I'm going to select the task sequence to use for this. And it'll think for a second, and then it's going to show me all of the content that's associated with this task sequence. So remember, I'm also going through the pre-stage media wizard here. So I'm kind of killing two demos with one stone here. You can see now with pre-stage media, we're checking the task sequence for all of the content that's applicable. and pulling all of that into that pre-stage media file. We're using the same functionality then for Windows to Go. You might be wondering about this one, the BitLocker WTG package, and hold that thought because I will talk more about that shortly. All right, so then you choose your DP, and you choose your management point for your boot image. And then you do it again. You do the DP for the where the image is located. All right, so then it's checking the task sequence, and it sees that I actually have an application added as part of that task sequence. So it's just letting me know that, hey, this application is going to be part of this pre-stage media, and that there's no dependencies. If I had dependencies, it would be able to walk those dependencies and include those as well. So from here, I can actually add additional applications to include as a part of this pre-stage media file. So it knows that I've already added the one, so it doesn't show me that again. I could add this other one if I wanted to. Or if I really wanted to, I could actually remove this application at this point. Same, it shows me all the packages that are a part of the task sequence. If I wanted to, I could add or remove. And the same holds true for drivers. I haven't added any driver packages. That's why there's none shown. I add the where it's going to get all this content in order to create the pre-stage media file. And if I wanted to, I could add some additional task sequence variables or pre-start commands at this point. That would be a part of this media. And at that point, it's ready to go. If I were to continue this, it would create the media file. I've already done that. So we can skip this, and I can go pull that one out of the oven when we need it here. So let's take a look at some of the tools that we use for Windows to Go. So if you look in the installation directory for Config Manager 2012 SP1, by default under Program Files, Microsoft Configuration Manager, under the OSD folder, we have a Tools folder, which then also has a Windows to Go folder. And we have a couple of tools here. So the Creator tool is very similar to the Windows to Go inbox tool to create a drive. It's slightly tweaked a little bit, specifically for Config Manager. So once you create your pre-staged file, you combine that WIM file with this file, and you put them together into a source directory. So I've got my source directory here for Windows to Go, where I copied that WTG creator file as well as my WIM file. This then is the source for the package that we're going to distribute to users for them to be able to create their Windows to Go disk. The other tool that we have out here is a BitLocker tool. BitLocker is a requirement for Windows to Go, but unfortunately it can't use TPM because it can't access the hardware when it's running off of the USB drive. So we have a tool that you should include as part of your task sequence that will prompt the user for a PIN or a password as the task sequence is running. So I'll show you where that gets inserted into the task sequence a little later when we go digging into one of the task sequences. But this tool, you can reference this as a package. I mentioned that to you earlier as we were looking at the content of the task sequence. It just gets added into the task sequence right before you enable BitLocker so that you can consume that information from the user to configure BitLocker appropriately. All right, so let's take a look back in the console at... So here's that BitLocker package, and then here's our Windows to Go package. And if we look at the program that's configured here, you can hopefully you can see that okay. It's calling Windows to Go creator.exe, and then a switch to give it the name of the WIM file that's associated with it. Since it's in the same directory, the path is relative. And then the enable boot redirect parameter is to allow the system to boot directly to the USB without having to prompt you for the boot menu each time. So it just kind of helps things along. So you create this package and give it this command line and then deploy that out. So I've deployed this to all systems. You could deploy it to all users or a specific set of users if you wanted to. And once you've deployed that, your users can go into, again, Software Center or the app catalog if you're using that. I've already run this, so we're seeing this under installation status as opposed to under available software. And you can see here it shows up as the creator. And I'm going to click reinstall because I've already run it, but all the content is cached and it's ready to go. And we get the Windows to Go creator experience. Again, it's very similar to what you would get out of box, but it doesn't see a drive. It's looking for a drive. So if I take my drive and I plug it into my demo system, it'll search for it and it'll find it like that. I could then continue through, select that as the one that I want to deploy to. I'm not actually going to do this and wipe my drive, but at this point, you know, I could run through this process. It's going to lay that Wim down on the disk, and I would be able to, as a user at this point, provision my own Windows to Go drive. All right, so let's go back. So we made some changes as well in SP1 to the task sequence wizard. We now have automatic integration with BitLocker. So you can see from the screenshot here, and I'll do it in a demo as well, so you get some context of where this is specifically. But we have a check, you know, just a simple checkbox to be able to enable BitLocker. And by hitting that one checkbox, it'll add all the appropriate steps in the appropriate places to make sure BitLocker is enabled. And this is also using the pre-provisioning step. The pre-provisioning step is great. It will, right after the disk is formatted, it will set a flag to say encrypt all used space. At that point, after the disk has been formatted, there's little to none that's actually used. But then as it starts to move forward in the task sequence and apply the WIM file and make other changes, at that time, all of those actions are being encrypted on the fly. So the pre-provisioning helps speed up the encryption process significantly, as opposed to previously where at the end of the deployment you might have to wait a couple of hours for the drive to be fully encrypted. What this does with the pre-provisioning is it adds a little bit of overhead as you're going along, but at the end of the process you're fully encrypted and you just have to enable protectors. So there's a huge cost saving from hours down to minutes. As I mentioned earlier, too, we're also handling the automatic configuration of the partitioning steps for the UEFI, and I'll show you that in the demo in terms of how we're doing that. And with the build and capture scenario, the ADK tools only support the use of setup.exe in the Windows PE environment for the version of the OS that the ADK is based upon. So, for example, with the Windows 8 ADK, it's only supported to run setup.exe to install the OS from that version of Windows PE. So what we did is, by default, when doing a build and capture, it's going to ask you for a WIM file. So even if that's install.wim out of the sources directory, if you still want to do a setup-based install of Windows 8, you can go back into your task sequence and manually change the apply operating system step to use setup.exe. Some additional things that we've done in SP1, and this first one is really because of some of the additions to Windows PE, is we're now exposing these optional components on the properties of the boot image. One of our goals is to try and reduce the amount of external customization that customers have to do to their boot images. So instead of having to do some complex DISM commands or mounting and modifying the boot WIM outside of Config Manager, we're trying to bring as much of this as possible into the console. So I'll show you some of that in a demo. And if there's, as I go into the demo, if there's anything that you do with boot images that we don't do in the console, I'd be really interested in hearing about that. Because if we get some critical mass there, it's something we'd be interested in adding into the console in the future. Additionally, we're adding the capability now to export and import driver packages. So for those of you that do testing in a lab environment with your drivers, you get those set up exactly how you want. You can now export those out of your build environment and import those into production, and they're ready to go. And I've already talked about BitLocker, so I'll skip over that. And I think we'll go to a demo now. Okay, so first let's take a look at boot images. And if we look at the properties on this boot image, we've got some extra tabs here, specifically this one here for optional components. There are four here listed at the top. Those are required components by Config Manager, so you'll always see those, or you should always see those there. You can't remove them, you can't modify them, but it gives you an idea of what components are already there and how big they are, how much size those add. If you want to add additional components, hit the starburst here to add. You can see the whole list of optional components that are available and how big they are. One of the great things with the Windows 8 version of the ADK is they're adding the capabilities for .NET, which then gives us the capabilities for PowerShell, which is really cool to be able to do in Windows PE. So there's a couple of things for PowerShell here. I'm actually going to click this top one to show you that we also handle dependencies. So if you try to add a component that is dependent upon another component, it's automatically going to add that other component. So it's saying, hey, you also need the underlying PowerShell as well as .NET. So it'll automatically add those. Now if I come back and I say, oh, holy cow, .NET is 91 megs. That's way too big. I can't do that. If you uncheck that, it's like, oh, okay, well, then you lose PowerShell too. So we handle those dependencies for you. Also, you know, with the customization here, you can do some of these common tasks of setting the background, enabling command support. So again, if there are other things that you're doing with boot images, please let me know. I'd be really interested in hearing about those. All right, so let's look at Task Sequence Wizard. So when we go to create a task sequence and we use the install an existing image package, bear with me while I skip through these first screens here to get to what I want to show. We'll select. So if we're going to do an install, this is the context of that screenshot from the slide. So as you step into this wizard and you select the image that you want to deploy, it's going to give you the option to to set up the partitions, which will do both for BIOS as well as UEFI. And then it gives you the one check option to configure BitLocker. And then also, as I talked about, I'm going to restart that wizard, but go into the build and capture section. Again, bear with me as I skip through this. So you can see here, we're selecting an image. So this is a build and capture scenario. So you want to be able to lay down an image, a reference image, before you capture it. But it's referencing an image file as opposed to an installer package. And I'll show you a little bit later. If you do want to actually use an installer package and use setup.exe, you can go back and do this as part of the task sequence. But as part of this initial wizard, we're pushing people towards using an image package. All right, let's take a look at that. So let's actually edit one of the existing task sequences that I have. So if we go to the Apply Operating System task, you can see it's using the captured image, but it's very easy to change that over to an original source, installation source. So if you did want to do that. From a partitioning standpoint, you can see here we have our partitioning steps for a BIOS or UEFI. With BIOS, it's using the standard MBR disk type, and we have our system partition as well as just, you know, the rest of the available space. And on the Options tab, we have our conditions here, and there's just one at the bottom here for the UEFI variable that it's not equal to true. So if it's not a UEFI system, it'll configure the disk for a BIOS configuration. On the UEFI step, if UEFI equals true, then we do the UEFI configuration using a GPT disk and setting the four partitions that are required here. You can also see then we have our steps for BitLockering, so the pre-provisioning here, as well as enabling BitLocker down here. Taking a quick step back, this is the Windows to Go BitLocker step that I mentioned using that additional tool, which is very simple. You just associate it with the package and then give it a simple command line to enable that, uh, that functionality. There are some additional parameters here. If you look on TechNet, there's a great article that describes this whole that whole Windows to Go process that I whipped through real quick. That's all explained in detail on TechNet, and it includes a lot of the other parameters that are used. All right, I think that's it for that demo. Let me go back to the deck. Okay, so I'm done talking about SP1. So for the next 45 minutes or so, I'm going to focus on what's new in R2, what we're planning there. So that should say Windows 8.1 and Windows Server 2012 R2. Oops. Just noticed that typo. Gosh. All right. So, so this release, you know, the R2 release is focused on the release of Windows 8.1. Add a .1 to the title and add an R2 to the end of the server name. My apologies for that. So, you know, a lot of new functionality with 8.1, and that's been the primary focus of the Config Manager R2 release, is supporting those new that new functionality. With Windows 8.1 also comes a new version of the ADK, so Windows 8.1 ADK. And there's some things with that I'll mention in just a bit. As I mentioned earlier, if you're deploying Windows 7, Windows 8 is much the same. In the very same vein, if you're deploying Windows 7 or deploying Windows 8, the deployment of Windows 8.1 and Server 2012 R2 is very the same. Okay, there's not a lot of new fundamental changes in terms of how that's deployed. Also, as well, in terms of our OSD-specific site systems, the SMP and the distribution point with Pixi, same support there for Server 2012 R2. This note at the bottom. So the Config Manager 2012 R2 preview will be out later this month in open beta. Due to some issues that we currently have with the Windows 8.1 ADK, the Windows 8.1 ADK won't install on Windows Server 2008. If you remember from one of those earlier slides, we require the ADK and some specific components on things like the site server and the SMS provider. So for preview, we need to have the minimum Server 2008 R2 for the site server and the provider. And that's because those roles need to be able to support the installation of the Windows 8.1 ADK. But it's something that we're working very hard on with the Windows ADK team to resolve, because we realize that that's going to be a problem for a lot of customers. So I just wanted to note that. It'll be in the release notes, and we're trying to communicate this as much as possible so that folks are aware. All right, so as I mentioned earlier, there are some challenges with Windows PE in Config Manager 2012 SP1. The Windows 8 took a hard requirement that then trickled through to Windows PE, because it's based on the Windows 8 kernel, to require the PAE NX SSE2 bit. And the problem is that some older hardware, some older processors don't support that. Additionally, some older BIOS don't support that either. So even if the actual processor in the hardware supports it, the BIOS may not have the ability to enable that. And there are some older virtualization platforms that don't support these processor requirements, which means that Windows 8 actually won't run on those platforms. Well, because Windows 8 won't run, that also means that that version of Windows PE won't run. So a lot of feedback from customers who hit some pretty significant problems doing deployments in SP1 because some older hardware wasn't able to run Windows PE. Additionally, another challenge that we have is with how the ADK handles the OS platforms that it supports from a deployment standpoint. So the ADK team, the tools that they develop, they only do certain testing on certain platforms. So with the newest version of the Windows ADK, Windows 8.1 ADK, it only supports the deployment of Windows 7, Windows 8, and Windows 8.1. So for customers that are still using XP or still using Vista and still doing deployments of those operating systems, If we were to go with the Windows 8.1 APK in Config Manager 2012 R2, that would basically be saying, okay, you can't deploy XP or Vista or Server 2008, and that would obviously be a big problem for a lot of customers. So what we're doing in R2 is we're adding the capability for you to import a Windows PE 3.1 boot image. Windows PE 3.1. We're not going back to Windows 3.1. Windows PE 3.1 is based on the Windows 7 SP1 AIK. So this is the version of the AIK that you might be using with Config Manager 2007 or with Config Manager 2012 RTM. Now, if you remember from earlier, I mentioned you can't install both the AIK and the ADK on the same system. So this does mean that you're going to have at least one other system available, a desktop, a laptop, something, where you can install the Windows 7 AIK, extract the Windows PE boot image, and then use DISM on that platform to inject those required components. If you remember from the demo where I listed those four components that are required in the boot image, so you have to inject those. And then if you have other driver needs or other customizations, you can do that all on a separate system. Seal, unmount the WIM, and then copy that over to your Config Manager system and import that. Now, when you import that boot image, you will be able to see in the console the OS, the underlying OS version. So by default, when we add a new boot image, we'll pull that into the version attribute, but that's an editable field. So you could say it's just version 1 of that boot image. But we'll still expose the underlying OS version. So you'll be able to see very clearly in the console which Windows PE versions are 6.3 for the latest Windows 8.1, or if they're version 6.1 for Windows PE 3.1. A lot of numbers. The other thing to note is that the reason that we're making the customization of the Windows PE 3.1 boot images external is, again, from a supportability standpoint of using the newer ADK tools to service an older Windows PE image. So to avoid any issues then, specifically for the Windows PE boot images, a lot of the customization tabs that I showed you are not available for those boot images. So in the screenshot here, you can see that there's a number of the tabs that are not there in terms of optional components or drivers or customizations. So you're not able to service those boot images in console, but you can add the boot images. You have all the tools on there that you need to be able to deploy Windows XP, Windows Vista, Windows Server 2008 R2, all in a supported manner. One of the other functionalities that we added is the ability to do virtual hard disks directly in the console. So there's a number of reasons for this. A lot of folks may already be using virtual machines to do testing of your task sequences before you deploy it out to a bunch of systems or actual hardware. You know, use a VM to do a smoke test to make sure that all the logic of your task sequence is working. Well, now you can do that directly in the Config Manager console by creating a VHD and having it run your task sequence automatically. And I'll show you a bit of a demo. I'm not going to actually do the whole process because it is a bit time-consuming, as is the case with most deployment stuff. The other option is using this for integration with your data center. So in the same way that you are managing your deployments of your systems, of your laptops, desktops, and maybe even servers, you can now manage your virtual systems for the data center. So for VDI scenarios, it's a great way to do the same sort of capabilities that you're doing for your FAT clients. And I'll talk a little bit more about, at the end here, we have the capability to upload right to VMM. So right from the Config Manager console, if you have a VMM server available, you can push your VHDs right into your VMM library. Now, one requirement, since we're using the Hyper-V functionality, is that you do have to have Hyper-V installed where your console is, where your Config Manager console is, because it's actually using a lot of those Hyper-V APIs to do this work. In the background, it actually spins up a VM and does the work for you automatically. I may not recommend that you install Hyper-V on your Config Manager site server, But certainly if you have another system available, install Hyper-V, install the Config Manager console as a remote console, and you can do your VHD work from there. We also have the abilities to schedule updates and do some offline servicing of those VHDs as we do with our images. And we can also rebuild that VHD to do some servicing in terms of adding additional applications. Oh, it locked again. And I think, yep. Of course, my demo box locked seconds before I was going to switch to it. All right, so let's take a look at and basically, this is just going to be a click-through demo. I've already created a VHD, but I'll show you some of the wizards. I'll just give it a name, say where I want to put it. Then we associate it with a specific task sequence. So I'll say I want to run the VHD task sequence. And it probably would have been better if I showed you that one first, but we'll go back to that. All right, so it pulls in all the content that it had from the task sequence. And this is, you know, this will look very similar to the media creation wizard. It's using a lot of the same stuff. Do some additional customization, and at that point it's ready to go. So at least your work for creating a VHD is pretty straightforward. Like I said, I'm not going to show you this actual process, but I have some screenshots just so you get an idea of. Looks very similar to setup, so it does take some time as it processes through all of these steps, as it creates the hard drive, creates the VM, processes things, runs the task sequence, and then the completion is your standard sort of completion wizard. Very straightforward. So let me take a step back. I should have done this first. I apologize. We can create a task sequence, and you may have noticed this earlier. We have a new option here to install an image package to a virtual hard drive. So by selecting that, notice the menu changes here. It does things a little differently. In particular, when we select our OS image, even if it's one that supports BitLocker, it's still not going to give them the option to enable BitLocker. You can't BitLocker a VM yet. Or who knows if that's coming in the future, but you know, you can't do it now. So there's no sense in adding those steps because it's just not going to work. And there's some other changes, but it's basically the same as your others, your other templates. Just walk through it. You can add some additional applications if you want at this point, and you're ready to go. So if we look at the one I already created. Again, it's very straightforward, very simple. Certainly, you can come back in and customize this as need be, but you know, no UEFI, no BitLockering, some additional stuff that's also not used. All right, so once you have one created, like I said, then you have the ability here to be able to schedule updates, and it's very similar to the other scheduling updates wizard. It's very straightforward. I don't have any updates in this system, so that's why they're not showing up. And then the modify is very similar to the previous one, but it locks you into that specific VHD. So it's, hey, I want to take that same VHD, but I want to recreate it, and I want to add some additional stuff to it. So as you go through then, you can select the task sequence that you want to use to recreate that VHD. It'll tell you what's already in that. That's where I want to get the content from. And it's ready to go back and refresh that hard drive. And then with upload to VMM, I don't have VMM available, but I can at least show you an idea of what it is. It's a very simple wizard. You tell it, hey, where's your VMM server, and what's the name of the library, and then it'll push the VHD there. So very straightforward. Couple more things to talk about. So we've added some new task sequence steps as well. For those of you that came to our session on Monday for MDT, we did a little bit of a demo of this as well there. There's a number of things from the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit that are pretty popular. And a lot of people will do the integration in part just to get those steps into Config Manager OSD. So what we're starting to do is look at what are the more popular steps and actually integrate them directly into OSD. So you don't have to integrate MDT to get some of that same functionality. So the three steps that we added for R2, the first one is the validate step, which we're calling check readiness. And basically what this does, if you're not familiar, is it'll check a number of different options. You use it at the start of the task sequence to make sure the system meets some basic requirements. The real key one is to check whether it's either a server or a client. I have seen instances where someone accidentally deployed a Windows 7 image to a collection that contained some Exchange servers, and everyone wondered why mail stopped working. So that's a great way, you know, if that was part of that task sequence and it's set for client, well, then it's, you know, that's not going to happen. It will fail real quick. The next one is run PowerShell script, and we're calling it run PowerShell script. That seemed the most appropriate. And really, that just gives the ability to run PowerShell in a very similar way that you can run a command line. But we're also adding the capability to be able to set execution policy directly from that step. And I'll show you that in a quick demo. And then gather, we're implementing to a certain degree in Config Manager. It's not the full gather functionality, but giving the ability to basically set dynamic variables. So if a certain rule is met, a certain condition is met, then set a variable or a series of variables. So that can be used in some really interesting ways to set task sequence variables depending upon the type of system or the environment in which the task sequence is running. And then you can use those dynamic variables later in the task sequence as conditions on other steps to determine what actions are actually taken. And with that, I think it's better to show than tell. All right, so let's go into our task sequences. I've created just a simple task sequence to demo these steps. So the first one we have here is check readiness. It should look very similar to validate for those of you that know validate. You know, we check, is the memory sufficient? Is the processor sufficient? Is the disk space sufficient? And then here's that flag that I mentioned earlier to set between client and server. So this one's very straightforward. If one of these conditions fails, then the step itself will fail, and thus the task sequence will fail. The option to continue on error is still there, but that really defeats the purpose of this step, so I definitely don't recommend using that option here. Run PowerShell script step gives you the ability to associate with a package. That package would contain a script. You give it the script name that's a part of that package, give it some parameters, and then you have the ability to set the execution policy. We're not giving all of the execution policies, just all signed, undefined, or bypass. Those seem the most reasonable and applicable. If you have a scenario in which you think another execution policy would make sense in this instance, please come see me later and let me know what your scenario is. But these seem the most appropriate. One way to put this to use would be to create a package sort of similar to the MDT package, the script package, where basically you have a single package that contains a bunch of scripts. So then you can reuse that one package and then just associate the specific script name that's in that package without having to create a whole bunch of packages all with one script. This script, I'll actually run this task sequence in a second. This script just does a very simple, creates a folder at the root of C with using the parameter as the name of the folder. All right, so here's set dynamic variables. And let me open this up to give some more room. So what you can do with this step is it will, as it says here, it evaluates things top down. So you can specify, without any rules, you could specify a whole bunch of variables. So you could use this in place of set task sequence variable step. If you wanted to set a whole bunch of task sequence variables all at once, you could use this step for that purpose and have absolutely no rules. The power of it, though, is being able to set some rules some conditions that then if those are met, it will set some variables, either some different variables, or it'll set some of the same variables to different values. So in this simple example, at first we set the variable foo that we're making up, we're setting the value of that to bar. And then if the system on which this is running is a Microsoft virtual machine, then it'll set the variable foo to bar 1. I'm going to move forward for a second. I'll come back to the screen, but I'm going to move forward. In this task sequence, then, we have a very simple command line. And this step is conditional on the value of foo. So if foo equals bar 1, then this step will run. So the logic follows through from the previous step. If this task sequence is running on a hard, you know, a physical machine, then foo will equal bar. But if it's running on a Microsoft virtual machine, then foo will equal bar 1, thus this next step will also run. So it's a very simple look at how you can use this, but hopefully that will give you some ideas of how you can leverage this in your environment to do some really dynamic stuff with your task sequence. Let me show you some of the other options we have here in terms of rules. So we can, excuse me, with the computer, we can identify a specific computer by some of the hardware attributes. So this would be one of the rules that we could specify. We could say, you know, if the computer is, the asset tag is this, then do these, set these variables. So if you have a very specific system and you want to do some specific things with that, you have that rule available. Location for default gateway. So if you have a specific network and you want to be able to set certain things, like maybe a prefix on the computer name or some other attribute, you can target that to a specific network. The make and model is the one that we already have here. Or then just a task sequence variable. So you can key the set of certain task sequence variables off of the value of another task sequence variable. So depending upon one that's already set, you can then set the value of others. Once you have a rule, then you can add variables. We give you an existing list of task sequence variables with a brief description. It's not as complete as what you'll find on TechNet, but it gives you a sense of what they're for reference. As you check these, it'll add them to the list below, so you see which ones you've selected from the list. And then it'll populate that into the screen here. You can then come back in and set the value that you want for this. If you want to mark it as a secret value, you can mark that as a secret value. You also have the ability to add a custom variable. So you can either, if you wanted to type out the full name of an existing one, you could do that instead of selecting from the list. Or you can type in your own, as we've done here with this example. All right, so let me just do a quick run through of, there's not much to look at, it's just running a task sequence. Oh, exciting stuff. We love progress bars, right? If you do deployment, you should be loving progress bars. All right, so now comes the really exciting part of the presentation, where we go into log file. I know you've all been waiting to go into log file. All right, ignore the errors. Okay, so here's our pre-start check. Memory's good, processor's good, disk space is good, server is a server, we're all good. Exit code 0, let's move on. So that's our check readiness. Here we run the PowerShell script. We've got execution bypass, throws you a warning saying, are you sure you want to do that? That's not a really a good thing to do. Obviously, that's not stopping the execution of it, but at least a little warning in the log. Grabs the package. Whoa. Oh, it already exists. I didn't clean up my system first. Oh, well. Well, so you get some error output. Woohoo! All right, so that's running the PowerShell script. And then we come down, and we're setting our dynamic variables. So you can see here, too, it's doing some gathering actions. So it's pulls the MAC address, pulls the default gateway, asks some asset information, so that it can use that for those comparisons. Come down here, and we can see where it's doing the conditional check for Microsoft Virtual Machine. That evaluates the false. This is actually running on physical system. It's not a VM. All right, so then we drop down a little further, and we can see it's going to be running the command line. And here it's going to evaluate its condition. So it checks, hey, we have a condition on this step that foo is equal to bar 1. And that evaluates to false, because from the previous step, it wasn't a virtual machine. So foo still has the value of bar, not bar 1. So this condition evaluates as false, and it doesn't run that second step. So there's a fun look at at some of our new steps. So there's a concept of being able to pre-stage content. Now, don't confuse this with pre-stage media that we talked about earlier. This is the ability to take content from a Config Manager console, export that out into a format that you can then courier, you know, via USB stick or disk or something, to a distribution point in a remote location if you don't want to wait for that to trickle across a slow network connection. So we're adding that capability now for a task sequence. So you can take a task sequence and create a pre-staged content file that will parse through the task sequence and pull all of the content associated with that task sequence into a file that you can then send off to a DP so that you can then pre-stage that content on your DP so that when you go to do your deployments out at a remote location, you can ensure that all the content is there and it's ready to go, and you don't have to wait for all that content to go across the wire. So let's take a look at what that is. So we have the option here now in the task sequence area to create a pre-staged content file. Now this functionality has been around. If you look in applications, you can see it's there as well. And that's been there. But we didn't have the capability to do it for a task sequence itself. So this is great because then you can know that you've got everything. So instead of having to come down and check the references and then go through each individual thing and make sure you pieced it all together, you just go to one spot. You know you want to deploy the task sequence there, so you know you need all the content with that task sequence, so you can do it in one spot. We can say where we're going to put that content. And I want to detect application dependencies. So if an application is dependent upon another application, and that application is included in the task sequence, I want this wizard to actually go down through those dependencies and make sure I get all of that content. So it's going to parse through that task sequence and figure out what all is there. So you can see all the stuff that's included as part of that task sequence, how big it is, and that none of them are dependent on the others. Add the distribution point where we want to get the content to create this file. So in the summary here, you can see, okay, it's got the list of all the content, the task sequence it's associated with, the distribution point it's going to pull it from, and then down at the bottom are the PKGX files that it's going to create. So it'll take all that content, put them into those package files, and then you can take that off to your DP and import it there to pre-stage that content that's ready to go. All right, so finally I want to talk a little bit about Surface Pro. For those of you that don't know, the Surface Pro is a tablet but of a little larger form factor that's not running Windows RT like the Surface RT is. It's actually running a full SKU of Windows. So it's running Windows Pro, Windows Enterprise. Because of that, that means that we can deploy it. It's just another device, right? So we can deploy the OS to it. We can manage it. Just the same as any other laptop or desktop. In May, the Surface team released, the first one was in April. They released a driver pack. That was one of the key things that we needed, right? We could deploy an OS, but it just wouldn't have any drivers. That oftentimes is a bit of a problem. The other key thing that came just recently is they added support for Pixie. So back in April, we got the driver pack. We could do deployments off of a USB stick, but we know that doesn't really scale well for the enterprise. And we needed Pixie support. Well, they added that in May, so that was a great addition as well. Now, Wi-Fi is not a supported mechanism for doing OS deployment. Just in general, from an OSD standpoint, we don't support Wi-Fi. Specifically, the big reason for that is that Windows PE doesn't support Wi-Fi. So in order to do a deployment to a Surface Pro, you do need the USB Ethernet dongle in order to hardwire it. So a little bit of a limitation there, but at least as of right now, that's one constraint. So the link here in the deck, which again you can get off of Channel 9 and access that Download Center site, has the driver pack as well as a great guide that some folks on our services team put together that covers specifically how to deploy Surface Pro using either MDT or Config Manager. And it walks you through all the steps, all the things you need to think about in terms of getting the drivers, using the dongle, all those sorts of things. So it's a great guide. I really recommend you check it out if you're looking at doing Surface Pro deployments. One other thing I wanted to note, and it's mentioned in this guide as well, is the capsule packages. That's the terminology used for these driver packs. It includes all of the drivers and the firmware that you need. And there's some different ways that you can deploy these capsule packages. Again, this is all covered in the guide. I just wanted to give kind of a brief summary of that. And there are ways that you can also integrate that into Config Manager. It's not as tightly integrated from a driver standpoint as you might find with other drivers. So it's probably more treating it as a package and doing a scripted install or potentially doing an offline injection. But at least the capability is there and something that we can look at in the future for adding some additional support. So that's basically the bulk of the content that I have. I wanted to mention we do have a bunch of other Config Manager sessions going on this week. For the ones that are listed that are past, again, they'll be up on Channel 9. And you can go check out the slides as well as the recordings there. Certainly would like to call out my own session from Monday where we talked about MDT. But there are some other great sessions on Config Manager and Intune coming up today and tomorrow as well. And you don't care about Europe sessions, so... I was at Ask the Experts last night, had some great conversations with some folks, I'll be around here for a few minutes after the session. If you have any questions, feel free to come on down and we can chat for a bit. Looks like we're finishing up a little early. I guess I talked too quickly. So we'll have some time here before the next session starts. We can talk here. And then right after this, I'll actually be down in the expo hall. I'll head down there. So if you need to run off to do something, stop down there. I'll also be in the expo hall later this afternoon as well. Yeah, thanks.